Right. I trust that you note the spelling mistake in the first word. I believe it is spelled wrong. But the sentiment is very much clear, as to those of you that have seen all the Audi adverts that have come through to most countries all over the world. I want to thank the organizers of this event for bringing me here. I think it's really exciting to be here, and I want to put it into the context of what I believe has given me even more important cause to be here, which is Robert Mugabe's recent declaration that he would be blocking internet access through the commercial ISPs in Zimbabwe. Robert Mugabe represents something which is something we face all over Africa and probably anywhere else in the developing world. And I think it's important to consider what those implications are around what is currently a very important component to this meeting, which is free wireless access, Freifunk, and so on. And I'm very pleased that the mission of that continues to grow and grow all over the first world. Robert Mugabe drives me to talk about the democracy and economy of scale around what we have built as a model in Namibia over the last 4.5, nearly 5 years. And to put it into the context of what faces you as first world consumers, most of you out here, and what it does to us as end users and also consumers in a developing world, in a third world. I think it's important to keep in mind that worldwide there is a huge amount of electronic waste that is being dumped, and that it's tied in largely around the way that you as consumers are buying this ICT, this electronic technology, this digital technology to make your lives more efficient and more effective, and obviously more entertaining as well. In Germany today, your tonnage per year is around 1 million tons that gets dumped and is effectively generated every year. It works out around 14 kilos per person per year. So that's quite a bit of e-waste. In India, and I'm pleased that Shamir is here, India is now emerging as the world's biggest electronic junkyard. And I think it's important to keep in mind that they are recipients, along with a number of other countries in the Far East, of probably half of the North American e-waste that is being created there. 315 million PCs will become obsolete this year. That means a lot of technology, including 130 to 150 million mobile phones over the next year, and obviously large numbers of other kinds of electronic waste that are being disposed of in various different ways. To look at it on a continent basis, and that means by 1,000 tons per annum, we obviously see that North America is far ahead in terms of what kind of e-waste it's generating. But it's important to note that half of that is being shipped out of the North American countries and taken to the Far East for subsequent recycling in often very difficult circumstance for the children and people that are sub-economic in the way they live their livelihoods. Getting it down to where we are at in the context of Namibia, we are active exploiters of electronic waste from the first world. World Computer Exchange, Computer Aid International are effectively brokers for technologies which have reached end of lease, end of life in the first world, and then deliver them to us, where we refurbish these technologies and give them an extension of life, a new lease on life for another 3 to 4 years in the schools of Namibia and obviously other educational sector clients. And I want to keep you in the picture around the 315 million machines that are being dumped and the number of computers that we expect to use realistically using refurbished technologies in schools in Namibia and then further afield on the African continent. The little statistic that you have here, weighted against what you are familiar with in the first world, is that, you know, some 60-70% of schools in Namibia do not have electricity, so obviously no technology is of any use to us there anyway. But it's important to note that we only have really one computer for every 280-300 children and teachers in Namibia. That basically gives the children some 6 minutes per week of IT literacy opportunity, let alone internet access, which I will come to in a moment. SchoolNet's been around for 5 years almost now, and while it has developed an enormous amount of functions, we are now increasingly facing the reality with the number of clients that we support in Namibia, both for internet and for low-cost technology solutions at these schools to provide access to the internet to the youth at these schools, is that to get there, we've gone on this road of fairly human resource impactful sort of lines of operation, and that includes lobbying government, it includes getting donor funding to bring these technologies into Namibia and for redelivery to schools, delivering educational content, increasing the strength of ICT in young, out-of-school, unemployed youth so that we can use those people as volunteers in a vision to have peer-to-peer training and support built into the model in Namibia. What it comes down to is that we have outsourced a number of our what were then core functions to players alongside us. These are equitable partners in Namibia. One of them is the XNet Alliance, which I will talk about briefly, which is an internet service provider which now in Namibia provides every school in Namibia with the opportunity to fixed rate internet access on a 24-hour, 7 days a week basis at around $32 per month. That's the cheapest internet provision in Africa today, and it's still way too much for most schools to be able to afford. But it's important to note that that was made possible through engagement with a parastatal, a state-owned telecom monopoly, and some other partners to get this to be a reality in Namibia. XNet is for real, and we hope that the model itself will actually be useful to the ITU and certainly the SADC component of the ITU to share with other telecom monopolies in other countries in Africa. What it brings SchoolNet down to now is its core function, which is largely to continue to build, install, maintain, and support those computer technologies in schools throughout Namibia, and do so in a way that we can actually cover the cost of support and ownership at those schools around the country in 3 to 5 year cost of ownership models. It's important to keep that in mind, that in most development sector initiatives in Africa, many of which, 99% of them, are still effectively pilot projects dealing with one or two schools, 20 schools, 30 schools here and there, is that very few of those initiatives actually pay any attention to the long-term cost of ownership and support of a monster, which is the dependencies we create on these technologies in these school environments. And obviously, when dealing with youth, the dependency phenomenon is far more effective. Take the relationship between cigarettes and 15-year-olds as an example there. Dependencies are what we're creating, and obviously we have to address that on a global scale around how we continue to sustain those dependencies and get people ultimately to pay for them. If one looks at it in the context of what we fundamentally are being seen as today and what we would like to have us seen as in the future, today SchoolNet is seen as a donor by schools in Namibia. We would like to get them to see us as a service provider, and in us being a service provider, provide a quality of service that we can actually honor agreements with the schools on. Technical support and service, dealing with 17 to 23-year-old youngsters out of school, is generally pretty chaotic. And obviously, while SchoolNet Namibia's refurb center, or let's call it technical service support center today, is still very much run by a young, manageable age group, they themselves have not learned management skills, and obviously that becomes important in us being able to improve the quality of our professional service to the schools of Namibia. To date, we have some 340 schools that are served by SchoolNet. Not all of them are functional at this stage, for various good reasons and bad reasons. But at this stage, every one of them has been provided with technologies by SchoolNet to allow them to have access to the internet on a relatively small scale model of a server using open source LTSP solutions and diskless thin clients in the Linux LTSP model, with a connection in library resource centers and now increasingly in the actual classrooms where the computers are not only being used just for internet access anymore, but also for educational literacy, literacy training. At this stage, we estimate some 70% of these schools are using the internet on occasion. If you visit our website and go down on the homepage to the transparency link, you will see some indication of where we are at right now. We have a live connection to what schools are connected. Importantly, we have moved forward from being a service provider, an NGO, a welfare organization, a donor, to providing a solution that we believe now, using free and open source solutions, using refurb technologies and a hybrid mixture of new and old, using decent refurb second-hand technologies from the first world to build a model. And the picture you see in front of you is a recent innovation that we started off at schools, what we call our Rose furniture. It's a circle on which we mount our computers, second-hand machinery. We put all the cabling in the middle, and we avoid 80% of the problems we faced before, which in a school environment is largely focused around cables, cables that are used for boiling water, cables that are used for powering their mobile phones and so on. It's important to realize that we don't just provide technologies and walk away. We provide a general service infrastructure and a support infrastructure that makes it viable for us and the schools to sustain these technologies in circumstances that are not the best. We had a power failure 2 weeks ago in Namibia, a nationwide power failure, which caused some 30 schools' equipment to be blown beyond recall. XNet, just very briefly, is this alliance that was created. And XNet, as an alliance created with telecom operators in Namibia, makes it possible for us to now tap into a commercial cross-subsidy system that allows telecom as a money-making operation to share and subsidize the costs of this internet at schools. We now intend this year to do exactly the same with the energy sector in Namibia, which also is monopoly, is also state-owned, and is also making billions of dollars every year with very little return in terms of development plans in remote rural schools of Namibia. To get down to cost of ownership, and the reason why I asked Samir what the cost of such technology, the Simputer, is, we are now working in conjunction with a number of other players in Africa and obviously the Global eSchools and Communities Initiative launched at WSIS last year, looking at what would be a tangible 3 to 5 year cost of ownership model and support model that could support schools in remote parts of Namibia and elsewhere in Africa to drive these technologies and to allow these dependencies to evolve into some sort of service relationship. At this stage, noting that the cost to us landed in Namibia, in Namibian dollars, 3,000, which is equivalent to about 100 US dollars at this stage, the math is a little bit wrong. I'll get back to that now. The reality is that for us to support over 3 to 5 years technologies at schools, we need to compensate for stuff that falls over for direct reason that the equipment that we get from the first world is ropey or faulty and can only be refurbished in dribs and drabs, or it is technology that we acquire for new. At this stage, we're realistically looking at a model that costs us around 20,000 US dollars to build cost of support over 3 to 5 years. It's not cheap enough yet. And I believe there is a good reason for that, and that we can realistically look at getting more of these technologies that we are presently paying an arm and a leg for in dribs and drabs from the first world down to a net cost to us of around zero US dollars per unit. The reason for this is that at this stage we are able to acquire through agencies like Computer Exchange and various other partners computers at around 30 to 60 US dollars a pop. Those are dribs and drabs technologies. We cannot get through those containers computers all the same. The kind of CPUs that we are currently getting from these well-meaning partners in the first world are bits of this, bits of that, and absolutely hopeless when it comes to actually refurbishing and supporting those over long-term periods. What we are now doing is to buying 1,000 CPUs from traders in the States and in Europe that are all the same and obviously at a greater cost. And at this stage, it costs us somewhere between $70 and $100 to get decent Pentium 2, sometimes Pentium 3 technologies, Tier 1 technologies, landed in Namibia. That is still way too expensive for us to support over 3 to 5 years, from the simple reason that the warranties that would ordinarily be put on new computers could not be applied to these second-hand machines, and yet we have caught ourselves up in providing warranties over 3 to 5 years to these schools. So everything is scaled up to what we can get from the first world. Keeping in mind that we only now at the infancy of what we would like to see is a very big program to get hundreds and hundreds of thousands of computers shipped into the third world, into Africa, to support organizations like SchoolNet in the refurbishment capabilities. The cost of equipment dictates the number of users that would ultimately be subscribing to service and be looking at helping us build an income-generating model in Namibia. At this stage in Namibia, there are only about 15,000 internet subscribers. Today, there are over 250,000 mobile phone subscribers. And my hypothesis here is that it's basically a cost of equipment that plays a role in that change in subscription. If we can get the cost of computer technologies, including warranty and support, down to around $100 a unit, we will see 150 to 200,000 subscribers using the internet in Namibia. Refurbishment capacity has been talked about, and HP is a tier one company that we all know, has a refurbishment plant in Holland that generates 25,000 second-hand machines into refurbished, resaleable machines for the markets that they subscribe to through channel partners. Channel partners are organizations that have ISO 9000 or 14000 certification that they can and will work with only. HP refurbished computers cannot be sold to SchoolNet Namibia or SchoolNet Nigeria for the simple reason that we are not seen as certified, accredited channel partners. This gives us common cause to reflect on the validity of such standards and whether such standards actually help or actually don't help this thing we call freedom. And obviously, we are looking at ways to overcome these ISO 9000 and 14000 standards and the way that legislation is changing rapidly in the first world to deal with the recycling of e-waste so that we can still tap into these hundreds of thousands of machines that are being refurbished against money that's already been paid for by the consumer for recycling in countries like Holland and Germany and wherever else. We need to get into that route. Refurbishment itself in Africa would be a marginal cost to compare to what you would be paying for such refurbishment processes in Europe and elsewhere. So obviously it's something that we must consider. Optimally, a five-year cost of ownership model should be around $20,000, but we'd love to see that much lower. If we can get it down to $10,000, $11,000 over 5 years cost of ownership, then obviously we're going to see far more schools supported with technologies that have been refurbished for a lease of life in education. Namibia today needs 72,000 computers to reach what is an accepted ratio of computers to learners in the first world. So obviously to get one computer in for every 10 learners in Namibia, we're going to need a lot of technologies. At this stage, we cannot do that unless we change the scale of economy, and that is entirely dependent on how our first world providers and distributors play ball with us. We've managed to achieve a number of things in Namibia to support locally and remotely the mechanisms, maintenance, training, and whatever is needed to keep these dependencies happy. But we still need a serious change in the mindset of the big consumers, the big distributors and manufacturers in the first world to get to that kind of scale. Namibia only has 1,600 schools. Nigeria has 54,000. Andhra Pradesh has 66,000 schools. So obviously when we start tapping into these 315 million PCs that are being dumped or being generated for e-waste every year, we're going to have some serious reflection. What the current legislation in the European Union is going to be doing to prevent organizations like SchoolNet from tapping into the resources on which we can then build open source solutions for education in Namibia are likely to impact us at the level where we are still seen as consumers, would like to be seen as third parties that are bona fide partners of these manufacturers and distributors in the first world, and that we, as third-party partners, channel partners, with or without certification from ISO, would allow us to give an extension of life to these technologies, and then because of the consumer cost for something called an advanced recycling fee that is now being paid for by the majority of consumers in Europe, we would like to see the EU directive change with first world influence to allow us to be seen as these bona fide partners and see the role of third party partners change from what it is presently in the first world to that what we would like to see evolve in refurbishment capacity in places like Africa. Global eSchools and Community Initiatives has launched, along with the Economic Commission of Africa and NEPAD, an initiative called the Million PC Project, which we hope will deliver a million PCs to five countries in Africa by June 2005. We believe this is possible, but if the legislation that's currently being implemented that sees us presently either as consumer or recycler of these technologies in a developing country context where we need licenses or certification, then it is a pretty gloomy picture I paint for the future of technology Vorsprung in countries in the developing world. I think it's important for us to keep this in mind. You're all in the first world here right now. You've lived in a comfort zone, and obviously it's your lobby that is pivotal in making these legislators and these thinkers, these development agencies in the first world, come to track around what we would be expecting, which is simply some sort of accreditation and trust that we will not recycle in an environmentally unfriendly way, or that we would land up dumping things inadvertently because we don't have the capacities yet to do so. If you as consumer are paying 60 euros per unit for the eventual decommissioning of that technology, what happens to that 60 euros? Where do those 60 euros go when those machines are returned to the distributor or the manufacturer in Holland and then are refurbished and then sold on to channel partners in other parts of the world? That's a question we must think about in terms of trying to get this technology further. I want to end there because I've left you with a lot of thoughts, and I want you to also visit our SchoolNet website, but importantly, because some of the material you've seen on this presentation now come from and have been plagiarized without permission from ewaste.ch, but it is a gem site where you can get a better perspective on what is going on globally around building mechanisms and legislative processes around the dumping of e-waste worldwide. Thank you.